Welcome to the Helping Couples Heal podcast, a place for healing and hope for couples impacted by betrayal resulting from infidelity and or sex addiction. Your hosts are Marnie Breaker and Dwayne Osterlund, licensed marriage and family therapists, certified sex addiction therapists, and founders of respective treatment centers in Long Beach, Los Angeles, and San Diego, California. Marnie and Dwayne co-created Helping Couples Heal, a comprehensive program for couples recovering from betrayal trauma, including an in-person two-day workshop, an online aftercare program, and this podcast series is the first component of the program. Thank you for listening. Marnie and Dwayne are committed to helping you recover from the devastating impact of betrayal trauma and are honored to support you wherever you may be in your healing. If you've lost hope, you've come to the right place. Now, take a slow, deep breath, and let's begin with the Helping Couples Heal podcast.
Hello, everyone. Welcome back to the Helping Couples Heal podcast. This is Marnie. And today I am with an extraordinary coach who I have known for at least 20 years and have been working with her since, I think, 2015. So I'm excited to introduce you to Elise Kraft, who, as I said, is a transformational life coach. And she has been working with me at HCH very closely. And I am really excited to have her with us.
Hi, Marnie. It's good to be here.
It's nice to have you. So I know you and I were trying to figure out recently what would be the best topic for us to talk about today. And in light of the fact that we have been doing a lot of work around deceptive sexuality and integrity abuse, I thought that that would be a really important topic to talk about now. We did some episodes a long time ago with Dr. Manwala. I think we've got four different episodes with him, but it's been a long time. And a lot of the concepts that we talked about are so important and unfortunately are not talked about out in the community as much as I think they should. So let's do that. Let's bring it into the light. We're going to talk about integrity abuse today. And often, as soon as I say the word abuse or anybody says the word abuse, people recoil. Nobody likes that word. But let's say it today as much as we can, actually, because the more you say something, the more you highlight it, the less heavy it is, the less overwhelming, right? It becomes more acceptable. We have to accept it. We don't have to like it, but we have to accept what's real. You know, but deceptive sexuality and betrayal is all about dishonesty and a manipulation of or denial of reality. So it is our responsibility, Elise. You and I have a really big platform here, right, with this podcast and a lot of people listening, and we need to speak to the truth. So let's talk about abuse and what abuse looks like in the context of deceptive sexuality.
Yeah, to your point, as soon as you say that word abuse, I can see it on the client's face. I have a men's group within Helping Couples Heal. And the minute that that word is said, energetically, you can see a shift. I'll cop to and I'll own and I will stand up that I'm an addict. But on the other side, I don't want to identify with that. And as we were talking about earlier, if there is a secret sexual basement, there is integrity abuse.
Yeah. And, you know, I know that a lot of our listeners are very familiar with that metaphor of the secret sexual basement, but I also have to assume that there might be lots of people out there who don't know. So let me share this metaphor that's very useful in helping to understand deceptive sexuality and integrity abuse. So imagine a home where all the members of a family live together. And they live happily in that home. And the home has, you know, four bedrooms and three bathrooms and a study and a playroom and whatever else is there. And there's different floors. You know, there's a second floor where the bedrooms are. And then on the first floor, it's like the family room and the kitchen. And they store all their sporting goods and all their other stuff in the garage. And so that's what everybody in the family thinks is going on. You know, we have a two-story house with a garage. And what they're not aware of is that this happy home includes a secret basement down below. And in reality, there exists an entire hidden basement to the home. And that basement is filled with secrets and behaviors that only one member of the family knows about. And that's the family member who created and maintained the hidden basement. So that person enters into the basement to engage in secret sexual behaviors and to connect with other people in either sexual or romantic or emotional ways. And when this family member goes into the basement, they become a person who the rest of the family would never recognize in terms of their values, their thoughts, their feelings, their attitudes. And the person becomes unrecognizable because they act in ways that are completely contrasting to how they behave and represent themselves when they're upstairs on the first floor or the second floor with the family. So this is what you were talking about, Elise, a few minutes ago when you said it doesn't matter, you know, sort of what the behavior is, how often you're going to the basement, you know, and what you're doing there. What matters is that there's a basement. If you have created a basement, then right there is integrity abuse.
And also to add to that, the basement, you know, literally, obviously, in most cases is invisible. So you can be sitting at the dinner table in that house with the fence and the dog and the kids and the whole thing. And, you know, while you're sending a message on your phone or setting something up or acting out with the deceptive behavior right there with your family right there. So it's that invisible secret life that only one person knows about. And it takes away all the decision-making and the awareness and the choosing of the other partner.
Yeah. And, you know, a lot of people think, or a lot of people who have a basement often believe that the people upstairs in the house are not being impacted by what's going on down below. You know, that's a lot of the distorted thinking that accompanies sex addiction, right? And betrayal tactics. So they convince themselves that those people on the first floor are not really getting hurt because they don't know what's going on. But I think it's really important to recognize that while that person is downstairs in the basement, they're not just engaging in inappropriate or deceptive sexual behavior. They're also doing things like withdrawing from the family and the intimate partner. They might be endangering the family by bringing people over. They might be blaming the partner or the relationship in order to continue this behavior. We know that there's lots of deceptive tactics and manipulations that are going on. So those things are hurting the family members that are on the first and second floor. They might not know that the reason for the manipulation or for the withdrawal and the neglect and all of those things, they might not know that that's related to the fact that there's a basement and that there's sexual behavior going on, but they're being harmed and hurt nonetheless.
Yeah. And that dishonesty piece, the lying piece, like you got to call it what it is, lying, right? Withholding, you know, lie by omission, all of those things, it literally can be crazy making for the partner, for the people on the other side that sense sometimes don't know at all and are completely and utterly blindsided. And a lot of times, often, there are some things that seem not quite right, but you can't put your finger on it. And why? Because the betrayer has gotten so good at hiding that you feel like you're nuts.
And that, again, that is a manipulation of a person's reality. So that's the gaslighting piece, which is crazy making. And we hear about it so often when people talk about betrayal. So a lot of partners never have known before discovery about the acting out and the deceptive sexuality. However, they might have known something was off. It doesn't mean that they knew that there was cheating or infidelity, but they might think, you know, are you still in love with me? What's going on? You know, are you depressed or anxious? Do you, you know, maybe you have an emotional affair going on. I don't know. But they do feel something off. You know, maybe the one who's got the basement is just disconnecting from the family, less intimate in general, being a bit more isolative, not home as often. And so the partner feels that energetically and might say to their partner, what's going on? Like, is something going on? Are you seeing someone? And that other person might be like, are you kidding me? How could you even ask me that? Right? And then be angry.
Say that in unison. How can you even ask me that?
Right. And then the partner sometimes feels awful. Like, well, oh my God, maybe I've completely misread this. And then they might feel bad. And you know, the reality, the very sad reality about all of this is that a partner is really left with the choice when there's suspicion or something doesn't feel right, this is before discovery, they're left with either trusting themselves and their own intuition, which then makes them not trust and not be able to depend on the person that they're supposed to be most attached to, right? The person who is supposed to be the most honest and dependable. Or they trust that person, right? They trust their greatest attachment person. And then if they're trusting them and they're being lied to and told, no, everything's fine. Of course, I still love you. There's nothing else going on. No, there's no one else. Then in order to trust that person, the partner has to not trust their own intuition, their own gut, right? That second brain becomes eroded. And again, that's abusive. Intentionally eroding your partner's sense of reality is abusive. And if anybody wants to look up that word abuse, you know, kind of going back to what is abuse, I was thinking about this earlier. Most addicts that I've worked with have never had a problem saying, I abuse sex, or I abuse alcohol, I abuse drugs.
I abuse porn.
Right. I abuse porn. Exactly. I abuse food. But what most people do not want to say is, I've abused my partner, or I've abused my family. But that is what we're doing. We are misusing something.
Yeah. And being able to say it, and also to remember, obviously there are wonderful qualities, loving qualities, kind qualities, you know, all sorts of amazing parts of someone who also is abusing, and being able to stand up and recognize that that is actually what's going on, and be able to hold space for yourself and obviously for your partner and for your family is such an important part of the healing process. Because if you try to distance yourself from that and you try to divorce yourself from that, that's not me, I'll own this, but not that, it's going to be a long and endless road.
Absolutely. And I heard something once that's really powerful. I love this. And it's that when we disown our parts, they knock louder. So if someone's listening to this now and hearing that word abuse and wanting to disown that because it is too painful, maybe I abuse sex or pornography, but I'm not going to say that I abuse my partner. I'm not an abuser, right? Because again, most of the people that I have worked with have been good people. They really are good people. They're loving people. They're worthy of love. They're worthy of so much. And they have engaged in abusive behavior. Those things are both true. And I really believe that unless you name it, you identify it, and you acknowledge it, you can't heal it. And if you can't heal it, then abuse might continue. And the partner is not going to feel safe moving forward in a relationship with somebody who's not even acknowledging that abuse occurred.
Yeah. So oftentimes you'll hear, I've been sober for this long and she's still asking me. I'm still getting questioned about this. I had to answer these questions again. Answer them.
Yeah.
Keep answering them. Because in order for the partner to feel safe, they have to know, who are you? You hid a part of yourself from me for years, decades. So it's that repetition, right? There was habitual behavior that brought this to be. There has to be habitual behavior to heal. Like you said, you cannot heal what you cannot see. And ultimately, we are the problem and we are the solution. We're both.
Absolutely. The person who's caused the betrayal has this really interesting double bind of being both the person who really caused harm and destruction, and at the same time, they also have the ability to be the hero and be there for the partner to help the partner heal, right? Be there and acknowledge, you know, what they've done. Acknowledge the reality, no matter how painful it is to acknowledge. You know, again, going back to the definition of abuse, one of the definitions is to treat a person with cruelty, and also to speak in an insulting and offensive way to or about someone. Think about when you were acting out and you were not nice to your partner. You were probably feeling guilt or shame or frustrated, or maybe you were being confronted in some way and you were mean. You were unkind. You know, you were cruel. That's abusive. So I think, you know, I want to leave people with hope. I always like to say, like, we're talking about a really big topic that's really hard for people. And it's possible that a lot of people hit stop as soon as, you know, they heard the word abuse. So if you're still listening, I commend you. I give you a lot of credit, and I think you're very courageous because I know this is not easy. However, it's so important to see. It's so important to see and to be able to recognize that you engaged in this behavior. It's not who you are. It's not all you are. And I want to say this too, because this is that hope piece. I don't believe in walking around for the rest of your life saying, I'm an abuser. I'm an abuser. Like, that's who I am. What I do believe in is recognizing that there was abuse and recognizing that it was a part of the past in order to heal. And I say the same to the person that's been abused, the person who has survived all of this, you know, the betrayed partner. Yes, we need to acknowledge that you were a victim and that you were victimized and that you were victimized by your partner, right? The person that you love more than anybody else, the person that you feel is supposed to keep you safe. So you were victimized and you were a victim. But in order to heal and move forward and look towards the future and joy and, you know, just this new beautiful version or vision of the future, you can't stay a victim. You have to recognize that you're no longer being victimized. And if that basement is still open, if the behavior, the sexual behavior has stopped, but you're still experiencing integrity abuse, then you need to look at that and recognize, wait, I am still being victimized, right? And what am I going to do about that? Because I'm not willing to be victimized. I don't want to stay a victim. So these terms, victim, victimizer, abused or abuser, these things are we have to name them, but it's so important for everyone listening. It's not who you are. Because I know for both, for the betrayed, it can feel like, you know, all I am is now this person who's broken or this person whose life's been shattered. I'm not myself anymore. I don't know who I am anymore. I'm so traumatized. I'm just not myself. And then there's the person who's done the betrayal who often thinks, oh my God, I am just this person who has abused my partner, lied, hurt my family, deceived everybody. I have no integrity. So this is who I am. And I really think that we need to look at everybody and recognize with compassion that you're all humans and that it's not about not needing to be accountable. There needs to be accountability and there needs to be reparation for all the harm done. And at the same time, we have to look at each person with empathy and compassion, because that's the only way that healing can take place, is in an environment and in a setting of compassion.
Yeah, it's a journey, and you hurt together and you heal together.
Yeah, I think that's probably a really nice way to end this episode. I do want to say, because I know how important this topic is, and again, that it doesn't get talked about very often. So I would just like to assure people that we will come back and talk about this again soon and maybe have just sort of a series of episodes that have to do with integrity abuse and these accompanying patterns of behavior or emotional abuse that go with the deceptive sexuality, the acting out behaviors.
Yeah, I think that's incredible. The more light, the sooner that there's healing that can happen and stick.
Yeah. Sticking of stick. Thank you for sticking with us. Again, I know this is a tough, tough topic, and we have done our very best to approach it with a lot of love and compassion for everybody. So to all of you, thank you for listening. Thanks for being here. And we look forward to seeing you again soon. Thanks, Elise, for being here. I really enjoyed our conversation.
My pleasure. Anytime.
All right. Take care, everyone.
Thank you for listening to the Helping Couples Heal podcast, where your healing is the number one priority. If you'd like additional resources about betrayal trauma or to learn more about the workshop, please visit helpingcouplesheal.com. If you're finding the podcast helpful, please support Dwayne and Marnie in continuing to reach others impacted by betrayal trauma by leaving a review on iTunes and sharing this podcast with someone you care about. Once again, thank you for listening. We're grateful for your trust and look forward to continuing to support you on your journey of healing.